Yes, good morning to you. How you doing? It's Sunday morning. It is. It's the 12th of January 2020. And it's a wet and miserable morning in Salford and Greater Manchester. It's absolutely horrendous here. Raining dats and cogs and all of that. Hope you've had a good weekend thus far. My name is Richie Allen. This is Sunday View. I'm going to be looking through the UK's newspapers, the Sunday ones, and we'll listen in on one or two of the BBC, Sky News, etc. mid-morning talk shows as well. Always good to have your company. Mean it when I say it. If you'd like to correspond with me during the programme, if you'd like to contact me during the programme, I should say, you can do that by simply tweeting me at the usual Twitter handle. Let's do Sunday View then.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah. I haven't even looked at social media this morning. I've been that busy, but I do have the Twitter open now. So good morning to those of you who do tweet amongst yourselves during the programme. Great stuff. Right, no need for the old theme tune then, because, well, lots to get through as usual. You probably, I say this probably every week, well, it used to be Brexit, didn't it? It was at one time Brexit. The Sunday newspapers dominated by stories about the UK's departure from the European Union. But today, the newspapers are dominated by two things. The front page is dominated by stories about the royal family. And inside, it's the royal family and the what they are calling the Iran crisis. Yeah, and there's a few weather stories doing the rounds, because the weather is pretty bad today, and it's apparently going to get terribly, terribly, terribly bad tomorrow and Tuesday, because Storm Brendan, Storm Brendan is on the way, apparently. And that's actually good news, because Brendan will probably get pissed as a fart before making landfall and then fall asleep. It won't be as bad as you think.
You junkies bastards, yeah. You junkies bastard.
That's Storm Brendan right there. And it's also Quitter's Day today. It's Quitter's Day. Apparently the 12th of January is the day when most of us break our New Year's resolutions. And yeah, New Year's resolutions are still a thing, because the people around me have been talking about their New Year's resolutions. It is still a very big thing for people. But apparently 12 days in is when most people realise that they didn't have the intestinal fortitude. The intestinal fortitude to carry out their plans. Not this boy, though. No alcohol for this boy. For at least another week. I've not had a drink. I don't feel like one. I haven't craved it. I haven't really missed it. Honest to God, I really haven't. And I explained before, my relationship with alcohol wasn't a healthy one, but it wasn't a desperately bad one either. You know, when you spend 12, 13 hours alone working on a daily basis, and I'm well aware that there are people who have far more difficult jobs than I do. I'm well aware of that. It's not, you know, a virtue signalling thing. I'm a lucky man, but I do work unbelievably hard. And I do work from dawn till well into the late evening. And then what I traditionally would do is have a rum and coke or two. And I got too fond of that. So I stopped. And I'm enjoying being stopped. But I'm also not stupid. I know that there will be a weekend real soon when I might fancy a glass of wine when I'm in town with the future Mrs. Allen. We pop into a local pub and I will have one. What will never happen again is midweek consumption. I've divested myself of that. So I've not had a drink and I'm delighted. I'm really happy. I've loads more energy. Of course I do. And that's the way it is. Anyway, shut up about yourself, you big baldy gammon. It is the BBG, not the BBC. Let's have a look at the front page of the Sunday Express. Showdown at Sandringham. So the royal family is still in residence at Holiday Retreat Sandringham. And this is everywhere. The Express says that the Queen will hold a meeting with Prince Charles, Prince Harry and Prince William. And Meghan Markle will join the conversation via video conference. From Canada. Yeah. All right. The Sunday Times leads with a quotation. The headline on the Sunday Times front page is a quote, allegedly from Prince William, the Duke of Cambridge. They've got more titles than Apollo Creed, don't they? The Count of Monte Fisto, the King of Sting, the Duke of Cambridge. The headline on the front page of the Sunday Times is, I've put my arm around my brother all our lives. I can't do it anymore. William has had enough, apparently. And this is from a friend. Not much of a friend, if the friend went to the Sunday Times and betrayed William's confidence. But yes, a friend has claimed that William has said, I've looked after my brother, I just can't do it anymore. And he went on to say, allegedly, we're just separate entities. Like I said, what sort of friend takes what you tell him in confidence or her and then runs to the newspapers? Me, that's who, I do it. You could be my friend and you could tell me something. If there's 20 grand in it for me, I'm going straight to the News of the World. Well, not the News of the World anymore, of course. The Sun on Sunday, because I'm a bastard. The Mail on Sunday, I wouldn't do that. The Mail on Sunday headline, Palace's Warning on Harry's Millions. This is brilliant. The Mail on Sunday says that the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, Harry and Meghan, they will be given a reality check, by the Queen about the dire financial impact of abandoning the family. Sounds like something Mario Puzo would have written. The Sunday Mirror, this is hilarious, they told Elton before they told the Queen. I mean, if you want to slap in the face, if you're the Queen, you find out that they told Elton John about their plans before telling the Queen. The paper says the singer has been a shoulder to lean on for the couple. They don't spend any time going to very expensive psychotherapists and shrinks. No, they go to Elton John. Yes, because Elton John is a bastion of sanity, isn't he? Isn't he? A very well together man, Elton John. Jesus Christ. And the Sunday People headline is, Kate and Meghan haven't spoken in 6 months. Right. I'll tell you where we'll leave this. When I was briefly on Twitter yesterday, because Saturday is my day off, I don't listen to the news, I don't watch it, and I don't read any emails. But I did briefly spend a couple of minutes on Twitter yesterday, just checking in, just to see I wasn't missing anything big. I don't mean in terms of other people's tweets, but sadly, breaking news these days, Twitter, the way it was meant to be. I did have a quick look, and something was trending. It was a clip of Harry, the Duke of Sussex. A clip of him when he was filmed by ITV Television last October. You see, ITV made a documentary last year, which aired in October, and it was about the Sussexes, Harry and Meghan. And in the course of the documentary, Harry said this, and everybody is, well, totally wound up by this and thrilled by it, because they believe that in this clip, Harry is giving the game away. I don't think he is, but have a listen to the clip.
You know, my mum clearly taught me a certain set of values, of which I will always try and uphold, despite the role and the job that sometimes that entails, if you know what I mean. But I think I will always protect my family, and now I have a family to protect. So everything that she went through and what happened to her is incredibly raw every single day, and that's not me being paranoid, that's just me not wanting a repeat of the past. And if anybody else knew what I knew, be it a father, be it a husband, be it anyone, you'd probably be doing exactly what I'm doing as well.
Yeah, I think you need to take a step back there. That isn't the bombshell that you think it is. We discussed this back in October anyway, but it's doing the rounds again. This is not Hamlet. This isn't an antic disposition here. At least not as I can see anyway, as far as I can see. Does Harry suspect that Keith Allen, in his documentary, and others, and the books of the late great Noel Botham, what a man he was, Telegraph war correspondent, regular guest on the Richie Allen radio shows in Spain, lovely man, brilliant writer. Noel is dead now. He wrote the definitive book about the death of Princess Diana. It wasn't an accident. she was murdered. Does Harry believe that? Does he believe his own family were involved? I can't say no for definite, but I don't think so. I think he was alluding to there, if you knew what I knew. You know, he was her son, and he saw the level of interest in her by the British tabloid media, the harassment. But I could be wrong. Maybe you're right, maybe I'm wrong. But I don't believe he's giving little clues. And then you might say, well, Richie, yeah, but then he's recently, you know, decided to withdraw from the family. No, he hasn't. What he wants is he wants to be able to go around the world and tout himself as, I don't know, some big hero of charitable organisations or of charitable causes with his wife. Maybe they see themselves as the Obamas, maybe, or as the Clooneys, maybe. And they want to be free to do that, but they also want to be to retain their royal titles and they want to get an income. So I'm not convinced that he was giving the game away. But listen, what do I know, right? I could be wrong. I just tend to be a bit circumspect about these things. Harry, was his grandfather involved in the murder? I don't know. I think they wanted her dead. When I've been asked over the years to speculate, I can only refer to my interviews with the late, great Noel Botham. Botham reads Botham, B-O-T-H-A-M. Look Noel up. Buy his book from Amazon. It's really cheap. Or from some other online retailer. Noel ultimately believed, in one of my very final conversations with Noel, not long before he died, he believed that the landmine thing was key to Diana's murder. You know, Clinton had agreed, and others, to banned the manufacture and sale of landmines, that he would support that. Then Diana died. And then all of that, let's ban and end the manufacture and sale of landmines, that just went away. So look, I don't know, right? Let's look at the front page of the Observer. I'm sure you'll have your opinions, and yours are just as valid as mine. I don't have any special insight here. The Observer front page, finally something about Iran. Iran regime shaken by wave of anger over downed plane. Protests in Iran. One at a university in Tehran. We'll look at that in a second. Just before that, the final headline. The Star on Sunday leads with a story on a television show called Love Island. So we will leave that alone. So the UK ambassador to Iran, Rob McCare, was arrested. And that's the big headline this morning. It's the big talking point on television and radio here. He was detained in Tehran after attending a vigil for those who died when the passenger plane was shot down last Wednesday. He left the vigil when it turned into a protest, he says. He was then arrested while having his hair cut, and he was accused of helping to organise the demonstrations. He denied taking part in the protest. He tweeted a couple of hours ago. He said he was attending the vigil because it was normal to want to pay respects, adding that some of the victims were British. That makes sense to me. Rob McCare. I believe him. The ambassador said arresting diplomats even is, of course, illegal in all countries. Indeed, it is. So the reaction to the arrest of the British diplomat, the ambassador to Iran, we'll first of all hear from Emily Thornberry. She is the Shadow Foreign Secretary and a Labour leadership candidate. She was on the Mar show and she was asked to give an opinion to react to the arrest of the ambassador, Emily Thornberry.
So I think what happened was that Rob McCare arrived at a vigil for the death of the 173 people who were killed on that jet.
Which then became a demonstration against the regime.
And I think that the vigil was a genuine expression by the people of Tehran about deep regret that what had happened, and he joined that. And then it became a demonstration, and he went off to get his hair cut and got grabbed. And they're claiming that he was inciting the riot. I mean, clearly that's just total nonsense. It's in breach of international law. They should not have arrested him. Thankfully, they let him go after 3 hours, but it was obviously totally wrong for them to do so. The trouble is that when you get an unstable situation like this, and when you get tensions building up, people under stress make bad, really profoundly bad decisions.
So calm down on all sides.
Yeah, I think she's right, Emily. That might be the first time I've ever agreed with Emily Thornberry, ever, and probably ever will. Likely, it's probably the last time. She's right. Under enormous pressure, the Iranian government and the Iranian military, they've made a cataclysmic mistake. When the news broke earlier in the week or on Thursday, Wednesday and Thursday, that the West was blaming Iran. I said at the time I thought that was nonsense. And I stand by what I said at the time, the idea that Iran would shoot a passenger airliner out of the sky was preposterous deliberately. And I said that, you know, there wouldn't be anything to gain. Iran would have nothing to gain by doing that. And I said, it's, you know, it's very unlikely. But the Iranian government has said, well, look, we did shoot it down. Shocking, really. That's a shocking thing. We'll talk more about it as we go along. So what about Security Minister Brandon Lewis? Conservative, of course, government minister. What does he make of the arrest of the ambassador? Brandon Lewis speaking on Sky News.
Yes, well, as Dominic Raab rightly outlined this morning, there is a choice for Iran to make, and we hope that they will step back from the edge and want to be part of the international work to make sure that we're working globally together, that chance to de-escalate the whole situation there.
But we're calling on Iran to change course, but are we going to do anything in response to this arrest? I mean, is, for example, pulling the embassy out of Iran off the table? Are we looking at staffing there? What's happening?
Well, obviously, we want to make sure that we have got an ability to talk to our partners and to countries around the world, so that diplomatic reach that we have in countries all over the world, including Iran, is important for us. The Prime Minister has spoken to President Rouhani just this week. We want to make sure we continue to play our part in talking to Iran and our partners around how we can de-escalate matters. So, although obviously one of our priorities is always around the safety and security of our own teams, we also want to make sure we're able to play our part. And that does mean that we are saying to Iran to be part of that process, de-escalate the situation in Iran and play a part in the global and international world.
Yeah, that was a fairly non-committal there, a fairly non-committal answer there on, well, on the question of a response. What's the response? What should we do? He wouldn't give any answer. As for the Iranian government's explanation of the downing of the Ukrainian airliner, that it was a mistake, what does Brandon Lewis think of that?
Well, obviously, it's a horrendously tragic situation what's happened, any loss of life, let alone on that kind of scale. And firstly, I would say, as others have, all our thoughts go out to all the family and friends of those victims of who will be suffering at the moment. And it is important, with proper respect, we get that repatriation of remains for people to be able to pay their respects. But in terms of the structure of what actually happened, there has to be a full, clear, transparent investigation, as Prime Minister Trudeau himself outlined, that Canada wants to play its part in that. Countries around the world will want to...
Canada can fuck off. Who the fuck is Justin Trudeau? I mean, give me a break. Canada couldn't beat Hartlepool. It couldn't beat Accrington fucking Stanley. Makes me laugh when you see guys like Trudeau bestriding the international stage, calling the shots. Piss off, pal. You're just another Rothschild Zionist puppet doing what you're told to do. Canada wants to play its part, says Brandon Lewis. Give me a break.
We want to see that there is a proper, clear, transparent investigation to get to the bottom of exactly what happened, so that globally, and obviously for Iran itself, to make sure nothing like this could ever happen again. It is completely unacceptable. But to, I don't want to get into prejudging the specifics of what may have happened. That's why it's so important that we all continue to ensure that there is a proper, transparent investigation.
Well, the specifics are they fucked up. And I would imagine the leaders of the country, Iran's leaders in Tehran, must be disgusted. Because what a catastrophic error that was. There was no reason for them to do it deliberately, of course. I don't think anybody can make a case. Because it was a commercial airplane, with mostly Iranian passengers on it. There isn't any dispute between the governments of Iran and Ukraine. It looks to be gross incompetence. I'll admit, I said on the radio show last week, I couldn't imagine how anything like that could happen by accident because of the technology that we're talking about today. But again, what do I know? I say that regularly, don't I? What do I know? It looks to be gross incompetence. Shocking. And the Iranian government should make restitution to the families of everyone on that plane. Now, I'm sure the families of those on the plane, angry and raw and grieving and bitter, the last thing in the world they want to hear about is money. Of course, they're not interested in money. But as time goes by, the Iranian government should make sure that the families of those on board that plane never want for anything for the rest of their lives. Shocking, really, because Iran had the moral high ground. Iran is not an aggressive nation. It is not an aggressor in the region. It doesn't start wars. It doesn't invade the sovereign territory of other countries. It doesn't do any of that. It had the moral high ground. The assassination of Qasem Soleimani was an egregious act and a violation of international law. And then the plane. What a screw up that was. 20 minutes past the hour. This is Sunday View with me, Richie Allen, live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester and multiple other platforms as well. Triggerwarning.tv, the TuneIn app and all the rest of it. I'll be back and we'll turn away from Iran and we'll talk about the Labour leadership contest briefly after a short break.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
22 minutes past the hour. Good morning, Sunday, January 12th, 2020. It is me, the BBG, Richie Allen, broadcasting live from Salford in Greater Manchester. Settled in now. Just thinking that this morning. 6 months it's been. Nearly 7 months since we arrived in Salford. And settled in, made some nice friends. Some nice friends. Very nice friends we've made. People we've gotten to know in the last 7 months. And that's a nice thing, isn't it? Right, let's, I'll read a few tweets. Mark tweets, Mark, best tell you, Mark, it might well be a setup, the plane. Ukraine wouldn't mind shedding a few bodies. Mark, no, mate. The Iranians have fucking admitted it. It wasn't a setup. They screwed up. They made a balls of it, as we say in Ireland. They made a Leo Rodi of it. It was a disastrous mistake at a time of real tension, when people were twitchy, really twitchy. They've admitted it. No way in hell would the Iranians say, yes, we did it, if they didn't do it. It was a mistake, mate. They've acknowledged it and they did it. And that's the way it goes. Dreadful. 179 people are dead because of idiocy. But I laid the blame. And I know some of our listeners will say, well, you would do, wouldn't you, Richie? I laid the blame squarely at the Israeli and American governments. Because they assassinated General Qasem Soleimani based on a pack of lies that he was involved in plots that were just about to begin. He was just about to launch attacks on folks, Americans. We'll come back to that later on. And they've provided no evidence to support that. Right? They started it. And that's what led to the plane crash last week. Right. I know some of you say, well, you would say that. Ultimately, it was the Iranians who pulled the trigger. They didn't start it. Good morning to William. Number of you there. Moinga there as well. Talking about alcohol. I won't read those tweets out because they're of no interest to me this morning. Don't be offended by that. Good morning to Gail. How you doing, Gail? Number of you talking about the royal family, the Harry story, knocking Prince Andrew off the front page. To be fair, before the Sussexes story, before the announcement that they were stepping back, the Prince Andrew story had not been on the front page. The Iranian the crisis has knocked it off the front page. But even before that, it had died down over the Christmas anyway. Good morning to Charlotte Bins and Barney. Good morning, Charlotte. Good morning to Liz Jones. How you doing, Liz? To Bass Ninja, to Cassia Miller. Hi to Desmond as well. How you doing? Right, okay, let's move on. Labour leadership. And briefly, just very briefly, anti-Semitism. Because anti-Semitism is back in the news today. Why? Why? Well, it's all about the Labour leadership contest. According to the Sunday Mirror and the Sunday Times, leaders from the Jewish community, there is no Jewish community. This is one of those things, if you repeat it long enough, it enters the subconscious, becomes part of the lexicon. There's no such thing as a Jewish community. It doesn't exist. There's about 240,000 Jews in England. They're spread all over the country. And like everybody else, they are made up, those Jewish people, of millions and millions and millions of different likes and loves and hates and wants and desires and ideologies. Right? There's no community. It's bullshit. And the deputies, or the Board of Deputies of British Jews, doesn't represent Jewish people. It's a Zionist organisation. It's, well, it's a pile of shit, basically. The Board of Deputies of British Jews. Scumbags. To a man and woman. It was the Board of Deputies of British Jews who put a statement out last year about this radio programme, claiming that it was a haven for anti-Semites. Didn't offer me right of reply, of course. Ran for the hills when I contacted them. When I invited them on this programme. When I invited them to publish my response to their, well, outlandish claims that I harbour anti-Semites. Wankers! The Board of Deputies of British Jews. No marks. And they don't represent Jews. Because I know lots of Jews who listen to this programme. I know lots of Jews who contribute to this programme. And they don't agree with this anti-Semitism thing. It's important to keep saying that, you see. Anyway, the Board of Deputies of British Jews, wankers, this weekend has called on all contenders in the Labour leadership contest to sign up to a 10-point plan to tackle anti-Semitism. Right. Now, some of the 10 points include, one of the points is, all campaigners, all contenders, must agree to settle all outstanding anti-Semitism cases by a fixed deadline. The deputies of British Jews say the new leader must ensure that the internal disciplinary process is independent. And the Board of Deputies of British Jews, they want the new Labour leader to introduce awareness programmes. Awareness programmes. They want every Labour candidate, whether it's a candidate for a local election or national or anything, to go through an anti-Semitism awareness programme.
What kind of fuckery is this?
I'll tell you what fuckery it is, Amy. It's re-education. It's indoctrination is what it is. It's basically the Board of Deputies of British Jews and every other whoring Zionist group in this country trying to, well, they've already taken over the main political parties in the country. But what they want to do is they want to get the apples straight from the tree. They want to get the apples straight from the tree. So when a young activist joins Labour and he or she looks like that they're a mover and a shaker and they might progress, well, they want to get him very early and remind them. Who's really running things? What they should really think and what they should really say. So it's indoctrination. Now, one of the leadership hopefuls is Rebecca Long Bailey. And she's got a mouth so big she could eat a banana sideways. Rebecca Long Bailey's mouth is so big she speaks in surround sound. She's the Salford and Eccles MP. So speaking to Sophie Ridge this morning about the Board of Deputies of British Jews, we'll hear Sophie Ridge's question, which is good, and then we'll hear Rebecca Long Bailey's answer. Here's the question, followed by the answer, about the 10-point plan mooted by the Board of Deputies of British Jews.
This weekend, the president of the Board of Deputies of British Jews has said that the relationship between Labour and the Jewish community has been all but destroyed.
Yeah.
And she's outlining 10 pledges that mm-hmm. she wants all of the leadership candidates to sign up to. Things like making the disciplinary process fully transparent and independent.
Yeah.
Will you sign up to those?
I will, indeed, straight away. And I think we need to work very hard and very robustly, whoever the leader becomes, to repair our relationship with the Jewish community. I was absolutely devastated, as many of our members were, to knock on the doors of Jewish community members who said that they just didn't trust the Labour Party anymore. And we do need to work hard to rebuild that trust. But that requires action. It requires making sure that we implement any recommendations that the EAHRC come back with, and they're due to report shortly. And it means adopting the recommendations that the Board of Deputies have put forward. If you were so devastated to hear the message from British Jews, what did you do personally as a member of the Shadow Cabinet for 3 years
to try and tackle
anti-Semitism in Labour?
There's a question for the would-be leader of the Labour Party. After all that horse shit about, you know, we let Jews down. Again, I've got to say this again. You've got Jewish Voice for Labour. You've got a number of groups of activists, Jewish men and women. And they are legion. And there are many, 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 many members. Thousands of Jews who completely disagree with the anti-Semitism claims. So who is she talking about, Bailey? Long Bailey, when she says we've got to apologise and make restitution to the Jews. Which Jews are you talking about? The Zionist fucking whores who say that anti-Semitism is around every corner, which is patently nonsense. I exposed this last week, didn't I? You have Cressida Dick, the Met Police Commissioner, admitting that they've only referred 5 or 6 fucking cases to the Crown Prosecution Service. Only 5 or 6 in 2 years. And those are not even worthy of prosecution. You know, some arsehole making comments about the Jews. And you know, it's nothing. There is no existential threat to Jews in the UK. But anyway, Bailey is asked, what did you do in the last 3 years to help root out anti-Semitism? What does she say?
So I wasn't happy with the way our process had been run, I'll be honest. I don't think we were dealing with complaints quickly enough, and I think that's quite clear. I've been quite vocal about that. I also felt that there should have been a level of independence to the allegations, the way they were investigated. And that's not just for anti-Semitism, by the way, that's in terms of all complaints, racism, abuse, you know, sexual misconduct.
Emily Thornberry was asked to rate Jeremy Corbyn's dealing of anti-Semitism. She gave it 2 out of 10. Mm. What would you give it?
I wouldn't give anything a rating. I mean, it's not...
Well, you gave him a rating
of
10.
I know. Well, it's not Todd Trump's. It's too serious to give ratings. We didn't tackle the issue. It's as simple as that. We have lost trust within the Jewish community. They don't believe that we're tackling anti-Semitism.
But hang on a second. We've lost trust in the Jewish community. They don't believe we're tackling anti-Semitism. But which Jews does she refer to? You see, I'm tired of pointing out, I told you what Corbyn would turn out to be. And I remember the backlash 4 years ago when Corbyn was elected leader. Even David Icke was excited about Corbyn. Jesus Christ. I laughed at him at the time. I laughed at him. I said, come on, you know better than that. Oh, they're trying to silence him. He must have something to say. He had nothing to fucking say, Corbyn. Tired of telling you about these people. All these people are concerned about and concerned with is their own status, their own careers, their own finances. They are whores, every one of them. Every one of them who takes the oath of allegiance to the Crown when entering the House of Commons. Liars. Very easy for Long Bailey to say, which Jews are you talking about that we have to apologise to? Because I've got a bunch of Jews over there that don't believe in this anti-Semitism witch hunt. You see, anyway.
Semitism and talking about small numbers of our members being involved in it and saying that it's not a big issue isn't good enough, because if you don't tackle the problem, you don't have robust...
But it must be a fucking small issue, because the Met Commissioner, Cressida Dick, told LBC Radio's Nick Ferrari the other day that after LBC gave a dossier to the police containing examples... Many examples of what they thought was anti-Semitism. LBC Radio, right? Yeah. Another fucking Zionist shill organisation. Right? Full of fucking Rothschild Zionists. What you have there is, you have LBC given a dossier to the Met Commissioner last year, and her looking through it, and the Met looking through it, and concluding that only 5 of the cases there warranted further investigation. There are hundreds of thousands of members of the Labour Party. And you're supposed to believe that there is an epidemic of Jew hatred in Labour. There isn't any Jew hatred in Labour, and there isn't any Jew hatred worth mentioning in British society in general. It's negligible. They're thriving. And you know what I say, and I mean it. Good luck to them. Enough of Rebecca Long Bailey, who talks to us in surround sound with that massive fucking mouth. Let's have the Beach Boys. We'll come back and talk about gays in the military. Gays in the military, goddammit! What a tune, what a tune, what a tune. What a tune. 23 minutes to midday, Sunday, January 12th, 2020. My name is Richie Allen, the BBG, not the BBC. Welcome to Sunday View. If you've just tuned in, lots of comments on there on Twitter. Thank you. And for those, if you want to see what people are tweeting to me, It's searched where it says search Twitter. Just put Richie Allen Show, all one word, no spaces. Press enter and you'll see the tweets. And if you want to engage with people, you can do so that way. Here's a quick one just before we move on to gays in the military. Gays in the military. Very good story in the Mail on Sunday today about an academic who changed his mind at the very last minute when having sex change surgery. And he's writing about what he calls the transition industry, which he believes is pushing people like him into irreversible operations. This guy had some psychological problems, which should have been exposed very early on in the process. And they weren't, because he believes it's the transition industry. This is important. It's in the Mail on Sunday. That's dailymail.co.uk. You can read it for free. And of course, that story comes hot on the heels, he says, using cliches, which he swore he would never use again when he had his last assessment with his pal from radio of yore. I had an assessment from a friend of mine just before Christmas who was a very good radio presenter. And he said, occasionally, Richie, don't say things like hot on the heels of. He's quite right, of course. But I did anyway. Last week we had the story about the psychiatric nurse, Tavistock, who's taking legal action to stop the National Health Service prescribing puberty-blocking drugs and cross-sex hormones to children. So this is huge. You know, people being fast-tracked into transition when there's no real need for it. And I had a lovely conversation with a woman called Diane, a transsexual woman called Diane from Cork. Well, from Wales originally. And that's a very important, I don't mean in terms of me, very important what she told me, Diane, you know, in terms of her own experiences and how she was helped by counselling and by psychotherapy. So what I would suggest is go to youtube.com, go to Podomatic, put Richie Allen, Diane, transsexual into a search engine. You'll get the interview if you missed it. Very important conversation. And I learned a lot from speaking with her about this. This is going to be huge in the coming weeks and months and years, of course. Now, in the Times today, Sunday Times that is, and also it's been covered by Sky and the BBC, it's gays in the military. I don't mean to be flippant or crass when I say gays in the military, but it's a big story. A defence minister, we know him well, Johnny Mercer, has apologised this weekend after it emerged that Catholic chaplains in the armed forces broke confidentiality. Well, they broke the confidentiality of confession to out gay and lesbian personnel to their superiors. And the result was, in some cases, they were dismissed out of the army or they were humiliated. This is according to campaigners. Private conversations between service members, soldiers, and Catholic chaplains were relayed to military bosses. This is a very severe breach of the sacrament of confession. I don't know, I was raised Catholic, of course, in Ireland, and I had to make my first confession before I made my first Holy Communion. And if you want to listen to the truth, the hilarious truth about confession and communion, Google the late great comedian Dave Allen. Or, I hate to say fucking Google, I hate it. But YouTube is the video archive, I suppose, of humanity. Go to YouTube, look for Dave Allen on Confession on Communion. It's ridiculous. A six-year-old child goes to a confessional box and has to fucking invent sins to satisfy a priest. Because when you're six, you haven't committed any sins. You couldn't have. You know, this has all been done to death by comics of yesteryear. But it's true. I've said this 1,000 times. I remember going to the confessional and saying, I didn't love God when... We were taught to do that. We had mock confessions with our teachers in St. Saviour's National School in Ballybeg. We had mock confessions. You couldn't... I mean, this is absolute fucking vaudeville, right? Six-year-olds in our little grey uniforms. Right, we're going to confession next week. It's very serious now. So we're going to have to learn how to do it. They sat us down and they said, right, well, you go into the confessional box. There'll be a little curtain. The priest will be behind it. And you've got to confess your sins because you can't receive the body of Christ unless you're pure of soul, unless God has forgiven you. For what, though? What the fuck could you have done when you're six? You know, but anyway, you say, I didn't love God when? And then you tell a story. And I'm not just saying this. You make stuff up. You make it up. What could you have done, you know? What could you have done? Yeah. So anyway, very serious breach of the sacrament by chaplains in great confidence, in great trust, the gay and lesbian soldiers went to the Catholic chaplains to talk to them about the problems they were experiencing. Obviously, back then, difficult being a gay or a lesbian man or woman, right? And confidence was breached. So Johnny Mercer, defence minister, says, our policy regarding LGB members in the military was unacceptable then, and as the defence minister, I personally apologise for those experiences. Now, this is in the news today because today is the 20th anniversary of the lifting of the ban on homosexuals in the armed forces. It was 20 years ago the ban was lifted. And one activist, a guy called Edmund Hall, a former sub-lieutenant, said that in the 90s, the Ministry of Defence regarded homosexuality as a threat to military effectiveness akin to treachery. It was believed to be treacherous if you were gay. You know, it was treason, basically. And he goes on to say he must have spoken, Edmund Hall, to 150 lesbian, gay and bisexual people who were dismissed in all sorts of circumstances when a chaplain revealed what had been told to them in the sanctity of the confessional sacrament. 20 years ago today, since the ban was lifted in the UK. And you might remember the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, which was brought in by Bill Clinton in the 90s, that was abandoned in 2011. What Clinton did was, in the mid-90s, was he said, well, if gays want to serve, they should serve. The military shouldn't ask them. Their superiors shouldn't ask them whether they're gay or straight or whatever, and they shouldn't answer anyway. That policy was abandoned in 2011. It's okay to be gay and be in the armed services in the US today. Good stuff. Yeah. So that's a bit, and that's getting coverage everywhere this morning, that apology. All very interesting. You might say it's not very interesting. I think it's very interesting. It got my attention today. Let's have a listen to Gareth Keenan. Gareth is the manager of Wernham Hogg Paper Merchants in Slough. And he explains, he's also a lieutenant in the Territorial Army. He explains when talking about office romance, why gays in the military is maybe not such a good idea. Gareth Keenan.
But they're not a good idea. Office romance is like shitting on your own doorstep. I've had loads of offers here, but I go, no way. Distracting. And that's actually one of the major arguments against letting gay men into the army. And I haven't got a problem with that. You know, a gay man's not going to put me off. I can handle myself. But if we're in battle, is he going to be looking at the enemy or is he going to be looking at me going, ooh, you know, he looks tasty in his uniform. And I'm not homophobic, all right? Come around, look at my CD collection. You'll find Queen, George Michael, Pet Shop Boys. They're all bummers.
All bummers. You could have mentioned Will Young as well. You could have mentioned Will Young if you wanted. That's your defence right there. If you don't like gays, if you don't like gays and you don't have the fortitude, if you don't have the courage to say, I just don't like gays, that's your defence right there. I've got Freddie and Elton and Wham and Will Young in my CD collection, so therefore I can't be gay. That's the, how could I be a misogynist? I don't hate women even. My mum's one. It's the same argument, right? 14 minutes at the top of the hour. Back to Iran. This is Sunday View, live on the Richie Allen website, richieallen.co.uk, triggerwarning.tv, TuneIn Radio, and multiple platforms. Just before we go back to Iran, brief breather while I take a sip of water. Back in 30 seconds.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today. Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Back to Iran then. Back to Iran, the hairpiece Donald Trump about the most obvious Zionist puppet there's ever been. Now, Trump is no more of a puppet than his predecessors, but there's no hiding it with him. He sat down yesterday for an exclusive chat with Fox News presenter Laura Ingraham. I don't know how you pronounce it. Is it Ingraham or Ingraham? I think it's Ingraham, right? Stupid name. Laura Ingraham, can't call it an interview When Trump is on Sky News, when Trump is on Fox News, you can't call it an interview because it's an easier ride for Trump on Fox than that Thomas the Tank Engine that you put a two-year-old in outside Sainsbury's. You know that thing? You put a pound in, plays the music. You know that one? An easier ride than even that for Trump. Now, In Graham wants to know, do the American people, Donald, have a right to know the hard evidence that you had for assassinating Qasem Soleimani? Couldn't be simpler. Do the Americans have the right to know the evidence that led you to assassinate the Iranian general?
Don't the American people have a right to know what specifically was targeted without revealing methods and sources?
Well, I don't think so.
What was that? Do the Americans have a right to know?
Well, I don't think so.
You don't think so? What else does he say?
Well, I don't think so, but we will tell you that probably it was going to be the embassy in Baghdad. You saw that happening. You saw it with all of the men, very few women, circling it and circling it very strongly and very viciously, knocking out windows and trying to get in, and they were close to getting in. And I called out the military. They said, we'll have it there tomorrow. I said, nope, you'll have it there today. We're not going to have another Benghazi on our hands. And we did a really amazing job. I got no credit for it, but we never get credit for anything, and that's okay. In the meantime, we have the greatest economy we've ever had, a lot of other things. But I think you would have had another Benghazi had we not acted quickly. That could have been stopped, and this was stopped. And we had our Apaches going there, the great helicopters, and they were dropping flares all over the place, and a lot of things were happening. They had action real fast, and everybody disappeared.
Did they have large-scale attacks planned for other embassies? And if those were planned, why can't we reveal that to the American people? Wouldn't that help case?
I can reveal that I believe it would have been four embassies. And I think that probably Baghdad already started. They were really amazed that we came in with that kind of a force. We came in with very powerful force and drove them out. You know, that ended almost immediately. But Baghdad certainly would have been the lead. But I think it would have been four embassies. Could have been military bases. Could have been a lot of other things, too. But it was imminent. And then all of a sudden, he was gone.
He was gone. That sounded very much like this, didn't it?
Oh, it's so, I mean, that is the land of unconfirmed reports.
Yes, we came, we saw, he died.
Did it have anything to do with your visit?
I'm sure it did.
He was gone. Yeah, we just murdered a guy with no justification. He was gone. Very similar, wasn't it, to Clinton talking about Gaddafi, of course. So what else came out of this Trump conversation then with Laura Ingraham? We should be hearing it now. Ah, yeah, here it is.
And by the way, I'm not somebody that wants to attack. I probably could have attacked 5 times, 10 times, having to do with Iran. I've been very guarded because I don't want to do that. But we may have to do something. We have to be in a position where we can do it, even from the negotiating standpoint. But hopefully it won't be necessary. We have tremendous sanctions. They're doing very poorly. They have riots all over their country. And they could straighten it out easy, but
it's a massive lie. They don't have riots all over their country. And BBC estimated that it's only about 1,000 people protested about the plane crash. Millions and millions turned out over the assassination of Qasem Soleimani. So they don't have riots all over their country. He's a pathological liar, Trump. But then that's just Trump to type, isn't it?
It's up to them.
Speaking of the sanctions, Ilhan Omar, I think, said today that this is akin to economic warfare against Iran.
This is what masquerades as journalism in 2020, by the way, and 2019 and 2018. This fucking whore, Laura Ingraham, supposed to be challenging this fucker, this madman. He said that the American people don't deserve any proof that we knew that Soleimani was involved in an imminent plot. Not really, says Trump. They don't deserve any proof. There might have been a time, maybe, I don't know, maybe it goes way before my time, when a journalist would have torn the politician to fucking shreds just for saying that. Or ripped him to pieces. And it would have been headline news. Despot, authoritarian fucking dictator, says the public don't have any right to know any evidence. If we say it's okay to go and kill people overseas and, you know, bring us to the brink of a third world war, you just fucking take it, do what you're told, we don't have to tell you why. He's on Fox News. Laura Ingraham. Now she's... I mean, this is beautifully, beautifully rehearsed and choreographed. She's now going to give him a chance to have a go at anti-Israeli, allegedly anti-Israeli Democrats, Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
On, even though she supports sanctions against Israel.
Yeah. She hates Israel.
She might do. She might. I don't know if she does or doesn't. She might hate Israel. I hate Israel. I don't hate the people. I hate the government. I hate what it stands for. It's not... And hate's a very strong word. There isn't very much I hate. I don't live with hate or anger. I despise Israel. Okay? Does she hate Israel? I don't know. What does he say next?
It's Jewish people.
She hates Jewish... I doubt she hates Jewish people. I'm sure she makes a distinction, Ilhan Omar, between Israel and Jewish people, because there's no comparison to be made there. Let's be honest about it.
You just have to take a look at her rhetoric. It's incredible what's happened to the Democrats in Congress. They used to be supportive of Israel. Today they're supportive of her and Tlaib. That's another real winner. Tlaib and AOC, who knows nothing. AOC knows nothing.
Say she knows more than you, you dumb fucker.
Poor student, poor everything. And then she comes and she talks about the Green New Deal, and all these poor fools say, oh, isn't it wonderful? Isn't it wonderful? But, you know, as I said last night in Ohio, I don't like talking about the Green New Deal. It's too early. I want to save it for about 2 weeks before, because they may change their mind.
Bernie Sanders was out. You're not surprised to hear this. Discussing Iran, what happened. And he basically said this.
Just as we were led into Vietnam and Iraq by lies, the Trump administration is misleading us on Iran. They have justified the assassination of Qasem Soleimani by claiming that he was planning imminent attacks. And yet they produce no evidence that would justify this claim, not even in a classified setting.
I don't see it happening. We are there for a very, very strong reason. They cannot have nuclear weapons. The Iran nuclear deal...
But Israel can, and pretend that it doesn't.
...deal signed by President Obama gave...
He goes on then to tell a pack of lies about how Obama's government gave Iran a lot of money. It did. It did. But Trump says that on the day they signed the contracts, the Iranians who signed the contracts were screaming death to America. That's nonsense. He also says the money given to Iran by the Obama administration was used for terrorism. Again, that's patently nonsense. It's nonsense. Anyway, I don't know. Right, it's coming up for 5 minutes to the top of the hour. I'll go on, we'll finish with this just for the crack. Identity politics, right? Labour has an MP called Clive Lewis. Clive is black. He might be mixed race, Clive. I'm not sure. I'd want to be definitive. I'd want to be very definite in saying he's black. But I think he is black, Clive. He wants to be leader of the Labour Party. Now, this morning, nominations must be in by 2:30 today, by the way. You must have all the nominations you need in order to qualify, to stand. Now, this morning, Clive Lewis only had 4 nominations from fellow MPs. He's black. Why? Well, race has got to have something to do with it, right? Here's Clive Lewis talking to Sophie Ridge. It's got to be race, right?
I guess the question I would turn back on you is, why do we think there hasn't been a woman, a female leader of the Labour Party? And I would say answer the question for that, because of that, is because we have something called structural sexism within our society. We have structural sexism and we have structural racism. Do I think that if you go to the PLP and speak to the men that they are overtly sexist? No, I don't. Just as I don't believe they're overtly racist. But these issues, these themes run through our society.
White man's burden. It's white man's guilt. It runs through our society. I can't get the nominations that I need to stand as leader of the Labour Party because the racism and misogyny is structural in society. He then sidesteps his own ethnic background and brings women into it.
We can see it with Meghan Markle and the way that she's been treated in the media. We know that this is a reality of the 21st century.
They treat Meghan Markle as they do because they don't like her, because she's a diva, because she is as fake as a 7-bob note. Not an ounce of legitimacy about Meghan Markle as a person. Complete fraud, right? Anybody can see that. That's why the press gives her a hard time. It's got nothing to do with her background.
Still, after 400 years of racism, you can't just overturn it overnight. It's something that we're going to have to work on.
Yeah, but racism was a thing. It was a big thing. There might still be a bit of racism around, but I'm not responsible for it. I don't have to take ownership of it because I'm a white guy. If you can't get nominated, mate, for the Labour Party leadership, it's probably because you're as useless or as useful as tits on a fucking bull. You're probably not very good, Clive.
But structural sexism,
structural sexism and structural racism.
Racism exists within our society and the...
Bollocks.
PLP, the Labour Party, is part of that society and it's for us to challenge that and to make sure that we do better. I've never said that it's because of my colour that I'm...
Ah, you just did, though.
Not being nominated by my...
Ah, you just did, though.
My parliament...
But you just did, Clive.
...parliamentary colleagues. But what I was saying was, if you want to understand why we haven't had a woman, why we haven't had a person of colour as a leader of the Labour Party, then we have to look at the entirety of the issue, which is that those structural issues do exist.
Piss off. No, they don't. Right, this is the Richie Allen radio show, Sunday View, signing off as the sun rises over Salford and Greater Manchester. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Thanks for listening to this. Back with you tomorrow at 9:30 for the newspaper review. And Dean Henderson is among the guests on the Richie Allen radio show tomorrow at 5:30. It promises to be a busy week. I'm closing out the programme with this beauty from Bruce Springsteen. See you tomorrow.